This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Thousands of baseball fans walk past a spot outside a parking garage near Busch Stadium. Starting in January, that spot will have something new, a 50-word memorial plaque that describes what happened there over the course of a decade before the Civil War. The text tells the story of an entrepreneur who made his business in the atrocity of slavery. He ran what was called Lynch's Slave Pen. His name was Bernard Lynch. The plaque marks a place where, quote, he sold thousands of enslaved men, women, and children from Missouri. The words on the plaque were written by former Missouri archivist Kenneth Wynn. And last week, Wynn sat down with our producer, Danny Wisentowski. They began by talking about his hopes for what people will take away from the plaque and the history of the man behind Lynch's slave pen.
The strong desire when you have only 50 words to use is to, you want to write too much. And so it takes a great deal of discipline. But the major outlines of his career, of his buying slaves from Virginia and then selling them as far west as the Kansas border, all that was clear, and so it's easy to put the large contours of his career on a 50-word plaque. What's hard to explain is how St. Louis was the most important Western center for slave distribution in the United States, and Bernard Lynch was the most important person doing that slave sales and slave distribution. And so you can't really say all that. So I think the plaque is part of a larger mosaic of us recovering our history, because most people, if everybody in St. Louis knew who Bernard Lynch was in the 1850s, hardly anybody's ever heard of him today. And this is reclaiming our history and taking responsibility for some of the things that made and shaped St. Louis the way it is today.
What did you find out about how Bernard Lynch came to St. Louis and established a very sophisticated business built on the selling and transportation of people?
There are lots of things about Bernard Lynch that are totally unknown. I mean, we know that he was born in Maryland, and he migrated with his family to northern Missouri. And then he slipped into St. Louis sometime, and he was a common policeman in the 1830s. And then he disappears for about 10 years. And then he comes back in 1849, and he buys a slave pen from an established trader who wants to get out of the business.
Now, we're talking about pre-Civil War St. Louis and Missouri. Could you describe a bit of what is a slave pen? How did this function in the business, and what did it mean for him to build this network?
Well, he had a pen, and customers would often come to him. He'd say, what kind of stock he had on hand today. And they might bring out a 9-year-old girl, or they might bring out a 52-year-old man. Those didn't sell very well. There was a prime target area, usually between 13 and 26. Those are the ones that sold the most. But the most common and desirable were field hands that got sent down the Mississippi River by steamboat. If you went to Louisiana, it meant you were going to the sugar fields. And if you went to, say, Alabama or most other places, you were going into the cotton fields. Lynch sold people all down the Mississippi River, but into places that you wouldn't expect. A lot of Missouri slaves ended up in Texas. So he dispersed them quite a lot. But he also did trading here in town in St. Louis.
And let me ask you kind of a bit about this slave pen that you have written the memorial plaque for that is getting, is going to be memorialized. And after many, many years of effort, part of this, of course, is, a result of what happened in the Civil War, the Emancipation Proclamation. Much has changed since these slave pens existed. Can you tell us what happened to Bernard Lynch after the Civil War, and in fact, what was his involvement, I guess, during the war, if we know?
Well, what he did is he sold slaves for about 12 years in St. Louis. He became the best-known trader in the area, became nationally known, and all St. Louisans knew who he was. But when his he was a bad prophet because he didn't see the Civil War coming, so he made an extremely heavy investment in building the slave pen that he always wanted. And this was the one that's near the Cardinals Stadium, where the marker is going up. It took him a couple of years to get the funding and to build it. It was his third pen. He had, you know, the first one actually burned. The second one was just a little ways away. And then he was dissatisfied with it because it was small. And he wanted to sort of build the Hilton Hotel of slave pens. Mm. Well, not quite as nice as Hilton.
Yeah, I mean, it seems quite like a prison, to be honest,
it
the
is.
Description.
It is. Well, lots of places like hotels and other places had what they called slave pens. Hmm. If you look at the most famous ones around the pens around the country, they're called jails, slave jails. And he was going from running sort of a pen operation to where he was creating a virtually a slave prison. And so he was aiming for that. He bought some land. It had once been owned by James Eads of the Eads Bridge and was brokered through an attorney. And it took him a couple of years to build, but it didn't last a really long time because the war broke out. When he finally realized that things were going, when Lincoln was being elected, he said, "Sell your slaves to the South. Help the South. Sell your slaves to me. I'll take them down. We can help support the South." And so he does this big pitch, and then he realizes that he's going to be arrested when James Fremont takes over as the Union general commander for the West.
Yeah, because Missouri is going back and forth a bit, and it would be, you know, for someone in the slave trade, you know, you mentioned he wasn't a good prophet. He didn't see the way the war was coming. I think there were a lot of people who seemed to have confidence that the institution of slavery, the Confederate States, this would be the future of Missouri.
Yeah, well, he hoped so, but it became fairly clear that St. Louis, at least, was going to stay within the Union during, his last 6 months here. And he began trying to organize his business, organize his sales, make the most of them before things got out of hand. And when he left St. Louis on very short notice. He wasn't sure when he was going to be arrested, but he had become fairly confident that it was going to happen. And when he fled. And one reason it's so hard to find out about him is when he left everything behind. He took his clothes. He went with just everything on his back. I don't know what he did, but there's a description by Union troops that his slave pen was a wreck. And there's only a handful of things that survived his departure. The Missouri Historical Society has his account box, which unfortunately is empty, but it has a sign that shows his posted rates and the limited liability. You give him a slave, you give him your slave, and he's not guaranteeing that he'll take any better care of that than one of his own. And slaves did run away from his pen. Some were successful, some overpowered people.
Let me ask, you know, this plaque that has taken years to put up and it's, you know, in a parking garage, it is going to get a lot of folks walking by it. What do you hope people feel when they see this plaque? Is there a greater responsibility or accountability that you hope is going through people's minds when they read this story and are reminded of what Bernard Lynch meant to the city?
Well, I think it's extremely important that we recover our history. I mean, history is our community. You know, we get our identity, our personal identity, through memory. Like, I was born here, I lived here, you know, my brothers and sisters are here. History is community memory, how we got to be who we are, what way we were shaped. I think most people are totally unaware that we played an important role in things that are, you know, not pleasant. I mean, there are things that we think are very immoral and are very uncomfortable with now. There'll be things in 100 years that we can hardly believe that we allowed or did today. But right now, it's easy to be appalled and disgusted by what Bernard Lynch was doing. But people lived with it. He knew that his time here was short, because he knew that that the anti-slavery sentiments in the city were growing, and that he couldn't hold on. So he moved to Louisiana.
Do we know what happened to him there?
He became a merchant, got married, and he joined what was called the White League. In other states, it would be called the Ku Klux Klan, but in Louisiana, it was called the White League. He was, by this time, old enough to where he wasn't like a night rider or something like that. He was more like a political spokesman.
You know, obviously, you have been working with on this plaque, on this remembrance project, both with descendants of people who found out that their ancestors, you know, owned slaves, but of course people whose ancestors were enslaved. And there will be, finally, another permanent sign in St. Louis about what that system was, who it made America as a people, and what it did to black people around us. I guess in our last question, do you hope that this does allow us to learn these lessons or to make a better society and not just a ledger of our mistakes?
Well, I think that Annette Gordon-Reed, who's a Harvard historian, she said something like, Thomas Jefferson is the best and worst of us. She won a Pulitzer Prize for writing about his slave family, the Hemings. And there are many wonderful things the United States has done, and there's many things that are really embarrassing and hard. We have to, if we can celebrate one, but we have to take responsibility for the other. A lot of garbage came along with a lot of the good stuff. And I think that the plaque is part of an effort to reclaim and seriously confront our past. A plaque is only a plaque, but it's also part of a mosaic of recovery. And what I'm hoping is that we will begin to acknowledge and realize what exactly has happened. And we won't be able to tell ourselves only comforting stories about what has happened in the past.
That was Kenneth Wynn, former Missouri State Archivist, discussing his research into the life of Bernard Lynch. A new memorial will mark the site of Lynch's slave pen, which operated for 12 years in St. Louis before the Civil War. Wynn spoke with producer Danny Wisentowski last week. We need to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the effort to place that marker and the lack of involvement from the St. Louis Cardinals organization. We'll also talk with a St. Louis native who's been reckoning with the discovery that their ancestors here owned enslaved people. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. I'm Eileen Cha. We're talking about St. Louis's role in America's slave trade in the years before the Civil War. A new marker will be unveiled next month, marking the spot of a notorious slave prison. Rocky Kistner is a freelance journalist based in Washington, D.C., who has been covering the five-year effort to create and place this marker. Rocky, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Great to be with you.
So, Rocky, you write in a piece that's now up at stlpr.org that there were still remnants of the slave pen still standing in the 1960s. Tell us about what happened to that site and what stands there now.
Yeah, sure. It's pretty shocking to think that in the 1960s, parts of a notorious slave prison, slave pen, still existed in the basement of a giant warehouse in downtown St. Louis, but it was there. And when the St. Louis Cardinals at the time, owned by the Bush family, Augie Bush, decided to build a new stadium downtown, which was the first Bush Stadium, they had to destroy some buildings down there, and they essentially tore down the drug store warehouse in downtown St. Louis, to make room for the new stadium. Unfortunately, in the process of tearing the building down, they destroyed the remnants of the Lynch slave prison, which is the most notorious prison of its kind in the region. And, you know, it was a very unfortunate situation because not only did they tear down the building and the remnants of the slave prison, but they also tore down a marker that had been placed on that building to commemorate or to acknowledge and mark the spot as a historical importance. So that's how I became aware of it. And when I discovered, you know, talking to my brother and other folks who are aware of that history, and Ken Wynn, who you just spoke to, you know, that there are actually photos of that, of the jail cells that still existed at the time in the 60s. Yet nobody really paid much attention to it. And fortunately now, a group of people have stepped forward to put a marker on the parking garage. It's now in its place, which is not owned by the Cardinals, but it's part of Interpol. Park Stadium. So anyway, that's how it happened.
Yeah, so that effort, the recent effort to mark Lynch's slave pen, it began about 2020. Rocky, talk with us about the origin of that endeavor.
My personal involvement on that?
Well, and also just the effort overall.
Yeah. Several people got together to discuss this importance of putting a marker on the building. There's a small group of historians, professors, the state representatives. Trish Gundy kind of led the pack to pull everybody together. That happened in 2020, and it was thought that at the time that the Cardinals would play a significant role in this effort, and they did indeed participate in meetings and discussions with Trish Gundy and her colleagues, but unfortunately, they never really decided to publicly support it, at least they haven't yet, so... The group was forced to find additional sources of funding for the project and also get the Missouri Historical Society involved, and which they did. So now they've got approval from the garage owners, who are very supportive of this effort too, to place the plaque at the end of the year, sometime in January.
And when we say that this site, Rocky, is close to Busch Stadium, how close are we talking here?
Yeah, well, you know, it's hard to know exactly where the prison was, according to historians, but they believe it was the closest location would be underneath the garage that was built after they destroyed the drug warehouse. So it would be right across the street, across Broadway, basically. From the stadium, right by the main entrance.
And you've already alluded to a personal connection to this, and you are a journalist. You've been covering this issue for quite some time now. Several years ago, I understand that your siblings discovered that your ancestor, Dr. Moses Linton, owned at least 6 enslaved Black people. Talk with us about that experience for your family. You and your siblings actually had to investigate this on your own, yes?
Yes, exactly. No, it was pretty shocking. We, as a family, go back to the early 1800s in St. Louis, very proud ancestors who really played a significant role in St. Louis's development and history with the Jesuit community, primarily. And my first cousin, Boo Kistner Henderson, who at the time, 5 or 6 years ago was directing Craft Alliance. She kind of got curious about the name, and you know, there's a lot of concern about people who might have developed from you know, this kind of history. And so our family just discovered that you know, through property records and you know, that date back to the 1850s and even 60s, but Civil War was in 61, that Lincoln was listed as a quote-unquote owner of seven people, including young children, 1, 2, and 3 years old. All we knew was the ages of the people and their race, basically. And so that was a major kind of surprise to all of us, because Linton was also a very famous doctor. He's depicted in the ceiling. There's a world-famous mosaics of the St. Louis Cathedral. My dad, who was also a physician, used to take us down to look up at the depiction of Moses Linton, who's kneeling down, taking care of a young child during the cholera epidemic, the massive cholera epidemics of St. Louis in the 1840s and 50s. So, and, you know, he was also a man who played a role in St. Vincent de Paul Society. You know, he was, you know, well regarded, and so to have this knowledge of him being connected to slavery really was a jolt to the family.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided to all get together and do something about it.
And you had a second ancestor whom you discovered also owned enslaved people, right?
Yeah. So we also started nosing around a little bit. We had some documents on my mother's side of a fellow named Dr. John Dan O'Brien, who was one of these historically important figures in the sense that he played a big role in promoting slavery in Missouri, which we didn't really know about until recently. Because he kept it kind of secret. I mean, he was not in the newspapers very much, but he was part of a kind of famous insurrection in Kansas, where he armed like over 1,000 men to try to promote, push Kansas to be a pro-slavery state, which fortunately did not work out for them. But you know, we had these documents in our family. We didn't really know much about this guy, other than he was a really interesting character. He was a dueler. He, you know, St. Louis was a famous place where people would often shoot each other over small peccadilloes, you know. So we have found out a lot about our family that we did not know about. And as I said, we did decide to, well, we had a meeting of something like, you know, like 20 people in our family to get together and sit around and talk about it. And some people in the family were, you know, not that interested in kind of doing more, you know, kind of making this history public. But most of us were. And, of course, me being a journalist, I knew exactly what I needed to do, and that was to report on some of this. So
right.
That's really how I got involved in reporting on this this topic.
So, I mean, wrestling with the good and the great harm that your ancestors did, particularly here in St. Louis, how have you and your family, I mean, how have you been approaching that contradiction?
Yeah. Well, you know, we do talk about it. We were just at a funeral of one of our family members, and a lot of people, we discussed it a little bit. Some of the reporting that I've been doing on this slave prison across from Busch Stadium, you know, has raised the kind of level of sort of public participation. My brother is a lawyer. He also has worked closely with the St. Louis Law Library to try to start up a learning center where we can provide more information, public information, because we all believe that it's important to shine a light on all of this. This is not to disparage anybody, but it's to, essentially make history known that, it's important for all of us to know what our history is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're still on that road.
And in returning to the topic of the memorial plaque to Lynch's slave pen that will be going up next month, we mentioned that the site today is very close to Busch Stadium. Do you have any hope that the Cardinals organization will, come back on to support in some way, not just this plaque, but what kinds of conversations need to be had moving forward?
Right. Well, I certainly have hope, but I must admit I'm pretty disappointed so far that the Cardinals, initially when I first started reporting on this for the Riverfront Times and then later went to the Post-Dispatch in 2024, the Cardinals gave us a statement, gave me a statement essentially saying, they support the effort of this group of people to put up some kind of plaque, or at least they didn't specifically say a plaque, but they said the effort to raise consciousness and all of the, fine words. But, when it came down to actually helping fund it or publicly, participating in the development of this plaque, the Cardinals really have chosen not to. Now, I don't know whether they will or won't. I certainly hope they will get more involved in this effort and come to the unveiling of this plaque, because it's going to be right across the street from the main gate, and people are going to see it and ask questions, which is the whole point of it, is to raise consciousness and educate the public about our history, which, is important for all of us.
Yeah. Rocky Kistner is a St. Louis native and Washington, D.C.-based journalist. His story, commissioned by the River City Journalism Fund, is titled New Plaque Will Mark Notorious St. Louis Slave Prison Site Near Busch Stadium. You can find that piece at our website. That's stlpr.org. Rocky, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you. It's been great being with you. Thank you.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.